Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every Friday night after midnight, and we discuss all the movies, the stuff that's in the theaters, and the options that you have for on-demand. This is becoming a very, very popular way to watch films, films that aren't even in theaters yet, films that come out the same day in theaters that you can actually conveniently watch at your house, in your home, with your remote control, on-demand. And we review those and at least tell you about those options as well. So let's welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Eric,
hello.
How are you, buddy? How you doing?
Okay.
All right. Colin, how you doing, man? You had some dental issues. What the hell's going on?
Yeah. I had a chipped tooth many, many months ago, and I got it treated along with a root canal and a crown lengthening, but they couldn't do the crown lengthening unless they also removed a wisdom tooth.
Oh.
So I had all three of those things done in 2 days.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Did they give you
Thank
some...
iPods. I could listen to something while they're doing all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, did they at least give you some good meds?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm stocked up here. Yeah, I'm good.
That's
to go
what
here.
I'm talking about.
That's right.
There you go. Yeah,
it
should be an interesting review night here. Here we go.
So, Colin, what you got?
I have not had... No, those are... No, I have not had to go to the hard stuff yet, but it's here if I want it.
All right. So, okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm saving it, though. New Year's.
Coming over.
Yep.
All right. Well, here we go. Let's talk about some of the movies. We got some big ones to talk about tonight, and we also have some on-demand. Let's start with the on-demand stuff, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about I'm actually looking at the IMDb page for Three Geezers.
Yeah, as am I.
I'm looking at it, too.
Yeah, we're all looking at it. Three Geezers. It's the number three, Geezers, available on demand. What can we talk about here?
Well, let's go over the summary before we tell you who's in this movie.
Yeah.
Follow actor Jay Kimball as he researches what it's like to be old for a role in an upcoming movie. When he meets the residents at the Coconuts Convalescence Home, he quickly discovers that his perceptions of the elderly may be off from today's reality. After being on the wrong end of some pranks, Jay enlists the help of his Hollywood friends to turn the tides. And I'm not joking, it actually says, mayhem ensues.
Yes, it does. And I thought the kicker was the Coconuts Convalescence Home. But no, the kicker is mayhem ensues.
Yes.
It's not goofy enough that they have the Coconuts Convalescence Home.
No. No, mayhem ensues. And here's the thing, is that the Jay Kimball in question is played by J.K. Simmons, who we love.
Yes.
So immediately I'm like, well, how bad can it be?
Right.
And then you go to the next person on the list. It's Tim Allen.
Right. And then Well, here's the thing. First of all, is Kimball his middle name? Is that – do we
– No, I'm saying – I think it's probably J. period Kimball, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You're thinking like a J.J. Jameson?
No. I'm just saying because he's J.K. Simmons. Is it based on – is he playing himself?
Oh.
Like is
I
his,
don't know.
If the, is, does the K in J.K. stand for Kimball?
Kimball, maybe.
So,
Tim Allen is playing Tim. Scott Conn is playing Scott.
Right.
Kevin Pollak is playing Kevin, and Randy Couture is playing Randy.
Right. And Sam Raimi
as the director.
I went to the movie's official site.
Yeah.
And it's got the trailer on the homepage, and I got the trailer on right now with the sound down.
Yeah.
This looks horrendous.
when a trailer with the sound down looks horrendous,
it just looks awful. But I'm morbidly curious to see where else it goes. It's a long trailer. I mean, they're cramming everything into this. It's still going.
Well, the movie you're going to see half of it because the movie's only 80 minutes. So
yeah.
By the way, here's the tagline on the poster for people who would like to see it. Everybody's smiling and wacky, you know, and it's Three Geezers with an exclamation point, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the tagline on the poster is a funny movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's available on demand if you choose to blow your money on that. All right. Let's talk about Alice Kills.
Alice Kills. I've actually heard some good things about this movie.
Okay.
The premise is very intriguing as well. The last one ended with mayhem ensues. This one starts with, after accidentally knocking her best friend off a roof, Alice is haunted by guilt and delves into a brutal nightmare wonderland of sex, drugs, and violence, her mind tearing itself apart along with anyone else who gets in her way.
Uh-huh.
And I've heard positive things.
Really?
So, yes.
Okay. Alice Kills.
Yeah.
But it's from the director of Zombie Strippers.
Oh.
So then, those positive things you heard might be a mistake.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Three Geezers and Alice Kills. Not a great start for On Demand.
Not really.
This week. The original title, by the way, of Alice Kills is Alice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Now, wasn't that? Now you remember the movie? What was the? You guys are probably too young, but maybe you caught up with it on the VHS and on the cable. Do you remember the movie Alice, Sweet Alice?
I know the cover box. I remember the box.
Yeah.
For it.
It was like Brooke Shields' first movie. It was before Pretty Baby.
Okay.
It was her first movie, and it was this. It's actually a pretty terrific movie. And it's a really creepy sort of like murder mystery movie with really unsavory characters in it, and Brooke Shields this was a movie that wasn't going to get a release, or at least in America or whatever, until Brooke Shields like hit it with until Pretty Baby hit,
mm-hmm.
And then it was like they were like, oh well, we got to release it now, and it actually turned out to be a pretty creepy movie. But that movie had an original title. I can't remember the original title of that one, but it had a different title than Alice, Sweet Alice. Communion. It was called Communion.
Yeah.
And it didn't involve anal probes and Christopher Walken.
Okay.
But yeah, so I thought for a second Alice, Sweet Alice was actually called Alice when it first came out, but it was called Communion. So, all right. Well, now here's one that you both have seen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Colin, why don't you begin and tell us about a band called Death?
Yeah, well, this is a documentary about a band called Death. And unless you are a scholar of punk rock history, you've probably never heard of this band. They started in Detroit. Four African-American brothers who decided to start a band and in the early 70s. And you think, okay, they're probably going to be a Motown band or, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire. And that's what everybody wanted them to do. Brother David went to a Who show one night and came back and said, nope, we're going to be a loud rock band.
Okay, hang on. You know what? We're a little bit late for a break, but I'm sorry about that. So hang on a second. We're going to talk more about a band called Death, which is available on demand right now. It's a documentary. We'll tell you more about it coming up right here on WGN. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right, Colin, continue telling us about the documentary, A Band Called Death.
Okay, so these four African-American brothers, they formed this punk band, and it's called Death, and they're great. I mean, you know, they formed a punk band before there was such a thing as punk. This is the early 70s in Detroit. They're not doing the Motown thing, and they're, you know, annoying the hell out of their neighbors. And they could have gotten a great record deal if they had just changed their name. No record company wanted to sign a band called Death, but the lead singer of the band, David, who's sort of the enigmatic figure of this whole thing, he's dead now. Just wouldn't have it. Would not change the name because, you know, it has very special significance. He thought of the band's name right after their dad died. They never got any success. He started drifting off of the band. The other three guys went off and, you know, formed a, you know, Christian rock band and then a reggae band. So the documentary pretty much follows that story. It shifts gears and starts to tell the story about how the band got, you know, sort of got, rediscovered, and thanks in large part to the internet and, you know, historians who are digging around record stores and, you know, discovering this little 45 that they made and distributed, and it's sort of become a hot rare collector's item. And it's a really great documentary about how this music you know, was created by this you know, this visionary who knew that someday people would discover it. You know, sooner or later it will catch on.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was obviously right. And it's sort of, it doesn't just live, the music doesn't just live on because of these collectors or because of the remaining band members, but it's also, it exists in the family. And it's just kind of taking on a life of its own now. And it's a really terrific documentary, especially if you are interested in rock history. You know, this is kind of like Anvil, the story of Anvil, or last year's Searching for Sugar Man, about, you know, bands that and artists that never got their due that are sort of getting, you know, rediscovered.
Yeah.
By, you know, and this is a really terrific movie. Definitely recommend it.
Awesome. Okay. Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I recommend it too. This is a film I think I saw last year at the South by Southwest Film Festival where music documentaries are pretty much a dime a dozen. I mean, a lot of them have sort of the same arc. A lot of familiarity.
And a lot of them are going to show up in Austin. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that most of them aren't good.
This
is actually one of the better ones. For one, I mean, it's a documentary on a style of music that was never, ever my scene. The punk scene was never really my thing. But here's the sort of that rare music documentary that was able to take me into, you know, the world of this band and specifically the music of this band and make me understand why what they were doing was not necessarily important, but different from what everyone else was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that a lot of music documentaries aren't able to pull off. They're not really interested in that kind of stuff because a lot of them are kind of made for the, you know, the fans of the music to begin with.
Right.
They're not really so interested in, you know, courting new fans. And here's one, you know, obviously they have a lot of fellow musicians, you know, giving their appreciation of, you know, who these people were. And, you know, the story does have the sort of familiar ring to it, but it's really sort of elevated with all these other things that are going on through it. I really like this documentary a lot.
Terrific. That's awesome. Okay. A Band Called Death, a great rock documentary. Comes in theaters at the end of June, actually. But if you would like to watch it now, it's available on demand right now. You can watch it on demand. It's called A Band Called Death. All right, cool. The Midnight Movie Reviews continue. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from efilmcritic.com. Lots of movies to review, and we continue on. And here is Colin, and here is Eric. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Colin, tell us about Francis Ha, which I did not see, and I want to see, because it's Noah Baumbach.
All right. Well, this tells the story of a woman in her 20s named Francis, played by Greta Gerwig, and who also wrote the movie, with Noah Baumbach. And I guess they're a couple now, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, yeah. Now that Jennifer Jason Leigh is done with him.
Yes. So she lives in New York and is trying to survive as a dancer or a dance instructor or a waitress, depending on the situation. But the real story here is her friendship with her friend Sophie, played by Mickey Sumner. And they're, like, inseparable best friends, so it seems.
And by the way, Mickey Sumner is Sting's daughter.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep, Sting and Trudy Tyler's daughter. Trudy Tyler.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Anyway, that is so they're best friends until Sophie moves to a Tribeca apartment with her current boyfriend, leaving Frances to fend for herself, and Frances ends up moving into an apartment with two hipster guys, one of which might have potential for a relationship, but he inevitably just keeps referring to Frances as undateable. And in spite of the fact that she lives in New York unemployed, she can still manage to somehow take trips to Sacramento and weekend trips to Paris to visit her friends.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I wish I had that luxury. And with all that privilege, she still drifts along trying to better herself, and the movie kind of just drifts along with her. The comparisons to Manhattan are inevitable, of course, because it's in black and white, and, you know, it's one of those kind of, you know, multi-character relationship movies. This is one of those movies I probably would have liked more 10 or 15 years ago, but I've grown kind of tired of by now. You know, the quirky, adorkable hipster trying to navigate relationships. And I feel like, you know, if this movie weren't in black and white, no one would care. It feels a lot like last year's Greta Gerwig can't get a date movie, Lola Versus. It's better than that. It's, you know, it's a little more realistic and it's funnier. And I don't, you know, I don't quite dislike this movie. In fact, a lot of it rings a little too true to my life right now.
Does she have root canal surgery in it?
No, but she's broke and living in the city and all her friends are moving away. And that's something I can relate to right now. But I feel like the Greta Gerwig thing is starting to wear out its welcome for me. You know, seriously, I just kind of sat there thinking, all right, how many more times do I have to watch Hannah take the stairs? You know, I think if you're in your 20s and struggling, you know, in the arts and living in the city, you'll probably get a lot more out of it. I just didn't really care. And I just kind of like, I'd rather go home and watch an episode of Girls.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah. Eric.
Well, I quite dislike this movie. Colin just mentioned Girls, and that's clearly where I'm going to go with this. I saw this at Toronto, the Toronto Film Festival last year, was Girls on HBO? Did it premiere last summer?
Yeah.
It was last summer. Okay. Yeah. So Girls was just kind of ending. It was just, you know, like weeks away.
Yeah.
Then I saw this movie. And I could not get Girls out of my head, you know, and maybe that's not entirely fair to the movie to make such an instant comparison, but the movie brings it on itself.
And also that Girls is such a strong piece of work.
It absolutely is.
You know, and that obviously if you're going to do something on that subject matter, try and make it as good as Girls, because Girls is pretty awesome.
Right, and it doesn't help the fact that Adam Driver is also in Frances Ha. You know, not so much playing the same character, but, you know, he was sort of the most welcome, you know, presence in the film that I saw.
Does he have his shirt on in it?
I believe he does have
a
shirt on.
Okay,
good. Yes, he does. last year's Lola Versus, you know, was in many ways very sort of insufferable, but it was just more sort of sitcom-y insufferable. This one's more pretentious insufferable, which to me makes it worse. Just because it's in black and white and she's kind of aimless and, you know, kind of quirky and doesn't, you know, have a direction. Ooh, how cute all that is. And her, you know, what's her name? Mickey Sumner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the song, you know, If You Love Someone, Set Them Free, was about her. I think she's pretty awful on this movie. I didn't like spending any time with her. I did not have a good time during this movie. I couldn't wait for it to be over, or for someone to get hit by a car. I'm glad that it's over and I don't ever have to talk about it ever again.
All right, now let me ask you this very quickly before we hit the news. Where do you guys stand on Noah Baumbach? Because I love Greenberg, I love Margot at the Wedding, I love Squid and the Whale, I like Kicking and Screaming very much. Colin, where are you on this guy?
I like Kicking and Screaming. I like Greenberg, and I think Squid and the Whale is a little overrated, but I like most of it.
What about Margot at the Wedding? I think is his best film.
Yeah, no, I can't go with you on that
okay.
one. I dislike that one.
Okay, Eric, what about you? You hate this guy, right?
I really like Greenberg.
Oh, okay.
I really like Greenberg. I think Stiller is really good. Gerwig is terrific in that movie.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, I think Greenberg is really strong. Margot at the Wedding, I hate. Squid and the Whale, I think, is overrated. Kicking and Screaming was, you know, that was right at the time when I was sort of in that area.
Yeah.
I found that kind of a little pretentious. And I don't know, what else has he done?
Mr. Jealousy is the only other one that...
And he occasionally writes with Wes Anderson.
Yes, he does, yes.
Yeah.
All right, well, okay. Well, I'm still going to see it, because I love Noah Baumbach. But, it's not encouraging listening to you guys. Midnight movie reviews continue. Man, it is Memorial Day weekend. The summer movie season kicked off a couple of weeks ago, and will continue. Lots of movies come out every week, and we will give you full reviews of every single movie that comes out into the theater that you can see. and your on-demand options that you can watch at home. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week from eFilmCritic.com, and we continue reviewing the movies right now. All righty then. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Eric.
Yeah.
Hangover, part three.
Part three, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. The finale we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Have we all been waiting for it?
Maybe from different expectations than other people.
Right.
Yeah. But here we are at the quote-unquote epic finale to the Wolfpack trilogy. That is The Hangover Part 3. Here we are. We're back in the States this time after their trip to Bangkok in Part 2. And Zach Galifianakis' character has gone and done another really stupid thing. And his man-child ways at the age of 42 is not really weighing too well on his family. When things go even worse than that, an intervention is called, and the wolf pack is brought in to drive him to sort of a treatment facility in Arizona where I guess he can get his man card or something. I don't know exactly what the point of this is. But they're going to drive him there. And on the way to Arizona, they are intercepted by a criminal played by John Goodman.
I hope the check cleared.
Yeah, seriously. Who has a connection to Mike Epps' Black Doug from the first movie. Which the film even reminds you that the John Goodman's character's name was mentioned in the first film. Could have fooled me. So John Goodman's character tells the Wolfpack that Leslie Chow, Ken Jeong's criminal mastermind character, has escaped from a Bangkok prison, and he wants nothing more than to find him because he, many years ago, stole half of his stash of $42 million in gold bars. So he's going to have the Wolfpack find him, these three guys, the fourth guy, the original Doug, who they couldn't find for two movies, is now taken hostage. So that's
an excuse to get the guy off the screen again.
Exactly. Poor Justin Bartha. Again, just enjoying in on the Wolfpack's reindeer games.
Right.
So he's taken off screen, and so it takes the Wolfpack to Tijuana and to Vegas to track down Leslie Chow and to come up with all this gold. Man, I just, the Hangover, the first film, when I walked out of it, I said it was a straight-to-video disaster. I said that, and then it blew up and became the biggest comedy of all time. So what do I know? The Hangover Part 2 comes out and is pretty much a beat-for-beat retread of the first movie, just set in Bangkok and not Vegas. And even big fans of the original found Part 2 to be a real slap in the face. So Todd Phillips and his writers apparently have decided that, they're going to give another big sort of F you to the fans and the people who criticized Part 2 and said, oh, well, you don't want the same thing again? We'll give you no Hangover whatsoever. So there's no Hangover involved. There's no mystery over what happened the previous night. This is all a very straightforward chase picture. That's all it is. It is a straightforward heist chase picture that I'm not even exactly sure where the jokes are supposed to fit in. I'm not exactly sure where the, because I know I wasn't laughing. There's nothing inherently funny about anything that's going on in this movie. You have, the Zach Galifianakis and Ken Jeong characters who were, sort of the wacky supporting characters in the original film. Now they are front and center. Bradley Cooper has got his Oscar nomination, and he's cashing his paycheck as a favor. The first movie, I didn't like Bradley Cooper early on in his career, and now I feel sorry for him.
That's
Silver Linings and Place Beyond the Pines, yeah. I feel sorry for him.
That's exactly how I feel, too, because I thought he was a major league D-bag. Well, yep. During the Hangover and early part of his career, now I like the guy and I think he's accomplished.
Right.
And I was watching this movie going, oh, dude.
Yeah. Props to the A-team as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, the only time I laughed in this movie is there's a moment where there's a at a karaoke bar And Bradley Cooper literally practically almost turns to the screen and goes, what in the F are we watching? And that's exactly how people should feel watching this movie, because Todd Phillips continually proves that he is the worst comedy director working in Hollywood today, easily one of the top five mainstream worst directors working today. There's nothing funny here. Did anyone arguing that this movie is some sort of bringing this trilogy full circle and is about some sort of inherent growth for the Zach Galifianakis character is kidding themselves in the same way that the Star Trek fans say that it has no connection to the other series.
Right.
That's ridiculous, because there's a coda on this film 6 months later that if you're supposed to feel any sort of sense of change for these characters as they give you a montage of all their different walking stints throughout the series. Like, look how these guys have changed. Look how they dress different. Look how they walk different. Look how they've matured. 6 months later, the same crap happens again. So save that stuff for the dissertation, okay?
Yeah.
And then rip it up and burn it. The Hangover Part 3 is unquestionably one of the worst films you will see this year.
All right, Colin. And here, let me just say this: you are the most unenviable of us three, because you saw this movie during dental work week.
So I
think I'd rather have a root canal than sit through this movie. But go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much more to add to that. I actually, you know, when I was watching it and was watching the story unfold, I was like, well, okay, I give them some credit for not trying to sell me on this idea that these idiots are going to do the same thing a third time over again, and we got to watch the same shenanigans all over again. Okay, they're going in a different direction. They heard, you know, the criticisms, and, you know, they're making an effort to do something different. All right, good. So at least there's that. But like Eric said, nothing funny happens. I mean, there's even the situations that these characters are in aren't funny in and of themselves. So even just by looking at this movie, you can't laugh at it. And then within those unfunny situations are unfunny jokes. And you could just tell that nobody here is inspired at all. Like you said, you know, everyone's just kind of cashing the check and slugging through this thing. Bradley Cooper couldn't care less. Ed Helms and Zach Galifianakis, they look like they'd rather do another quirky indie film, like, as soon as possible. There's just nothing here for anybody, and there's nothing here even for the fans until, you know, the last, you know, until the coda. And even that just, you know, just kind of feels, you know, slapped together or whatever. So, yeah, this is just, it's a bad closing for, you know, a bad trilogy that, you know, the popularity of which, frankly, baffles me. So I'm glad to see it over, if it is over. There's always a part four to everything.
Well,
now,
I think it depends on the size of the checks for everybody involved, if there's going to be another one. I hate these movies. It's kind of impossible for me to describe how much I hate the Hangover series. I hate all three of them. I think they're all crap. I don't understand that any human being on the planet could find anything funny about any of these movies. The first one is a piece of crap. I don't care what anybody says. It's not funny. It is stupid. It's crap. And the fact that it made the kind of money it made makes me feel really bad that I live in this country. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely horrible. Now, I will say this. Like you said, Colin, okay, they did not go for the carbon copy that they went with the second one. You know, there's no blackout. They don't, you know, there's no retracing your steps. There's no, you know, monkeys or tigers or tattoos on the faces or teeth being pulled out in this one. Heather Graham shows up. And there's a, you know, there's a callback to the baby, and there's a callback to the John, as you said, the John Goodman character. But this is bad. This is bad on a whole nother, on a whole different level. I mean, it sucks differently than the first two. again, man, Todd Phillips, it just sucks. I mean, the fact that I kind of gave Old School a pretty good review, and the fact that I like parts of Road Trip, most of which involve Tom Green, I want to take that back.
You should.
You know,
now. Do it right now.
But I love Tom Green, so I'm not going to do that. But this is horrendous. By the way, this movie, I don't think this movie is a comedy. And I'm not saying that because I don't think the Hangover movies are funny. I'm saying because this is not a comedy. It's like a straightforward kind of thriller.
Even the poster suggests that.
Yeah, that has like jokes in it that don't work. This is biblically bad. It was a pain to sit through this movie. I don't know if I hate I hate it in a different way than I hated the first two because they're different movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which one I think is the worst of the three. This one might be it because it's differently sucky. So it's awful. It's absolutely awful. And to put Ken Jeong and Zach Galifianakis at the center of this movie really says a lot about where Ed Helms and Bradley Cooper are right now. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, well, look, dude, we'll just show up. We'll get the paycheck. We'll show up and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Jeong seems like the only one who's like invested in this crap material. Because, you know, outside of Community, I think the guy's worthless. So awful movie. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, without question, one of the worst movies of the year, without question.
Well, we'll take it a step further, Nick, because we were trying to come up at the screening the other night, and I'm on record as saying that this is the worst trilogy in film history.
I got to think about that. Hang on a second, you guys. Hang on. Let's try and figure that one out. Hold on a second, because we got to take a break, and we'll figure out if this is indeed The Hangover is indeed the worst trilogy in the history of film. We are continuing with our midnight movie reviews. Lots of movies to review. The summer is out. We give you thorough reviews so that you can plan your weekend. On-demand movies and all the big ones that just came out. We just reviewed The Hangover Part 3. Colin and Eric and I all agree that it is absolutely one of the worst movies of the year. And, Colin, you didn't like the first one either, right?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I think I cracked, you know, I laughed at, I think, three times in the first one, twice in the second one. I think I might have cracked a smile at one point in the third one. So I'm not with Eric saying that this is the worst trilogy of all time.
I'm trying to think of other ones that... No, okay, all right. Here's the deal. We all hated Hangover Part 3. We all think it's one of the worst movies of the year. I absolutely hate all three of the Hangover movies. I think they suck, and people who think they're funny, I don't understand. And that's all there is to it. But now, what other ones, Eric, when you guys were having this discussion of what you think were the worst trilogies of all time, what else came up? Did anybody mention The Matrix? Because I'll punch some people in the face.
No. Three Colors was brought up.
Which one?
I'm joking.
I swear to God, Eric, I almost threw a chair through the window. You're going to diss Kuzlowski while we're talking about The Hangover? You're going to diss Kuzlowski?
No, that was for Colin.
All right.
The one that came up that everyone kind of went, oh, yeah, was Porky's.
Yeah, but there was more than three. Wasn't there?
No, not in theater. Was there a fourth one?
I thought there was a fourth one.
Porky's Revenge is number three.
I thought there was a fourth one.
Yeah.
No. Unless it went direct to video.
What was it? I'm sorry,
Eric? We were only counting theatrical. So if it like it if
okay.
like a fourth.
All right. I thought there
video,
was a fourth. Oh, so
count.
So what about, okay, well then maybe Amityville?
Amityville was brought up also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the second one's pretty cool. Well,
That was also said.
I don't agree with that either. We also had Big Mama's House.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, now we're getting into similar territory right there.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Elvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, okay.
And Home Alone. Oh. And the majority of these are from Fox. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it just is.
I do hate all three Home Alone movies. I do the Alvin and the Chipmunks. I didn't see all three of them.
I haven't seen all
so
three.
So I can't judge that one. I have seen all three of the Big Mama's House movies,
mm-hmm.
and I would watch those over The Hangover, quite frankly.
No, I can't. No.
Now, how many Dr. Dolittle movies did Eddie Murphy make? Just two?
Two.
Okay.
Two.
Okay.
And those aren't nearly, I mean, they're not very good, but they're not nearly as.
Well, Albert Brooks was involved in them, so they can't be.
The second one's not terrible, I don't think. Okay. We were arguing the merits of Dr. Doolittle films.
Isn't that ridiculous?
I'm gonna pull away from the table for a second.
Well, we all have to pull away from the table because we got the news, and then we have to review another franchise film. The Fast and the Furious 6 is going to be reviewed coming up after we hit the news, which is coming up next on WGN. Colin and Eric are back, and let's welcome them. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Colin?
Yeah.
Man, tell us about Fast and Furious 6.
All right. Well, yeah, this is number 6 in this unbelievably dumb yet still somewhat entertaining series of big dumb guys racing cars. And if you've actually been following the storyline with these characters, you probably know that they're all on the lam in the United States, and they all live elsewhere. And it turns out that their help is needed because even though they're wanted criminals, they're still the best at what they do, which is stealing cars and racing them. So they get recruited by Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, who by now should really change his nickname to Stack of Bowling Balls, because that's what he looks like now. Anyway, he recruits Vin Diesel and Paul Walker and all the other idiots from the other movies to go find some bad guys who are badass drivers, but who are evil and have tanks and can crush cars instantly. And if Vin Diesel and the gang can stop them, then they get full pardons. And there's a subplot about Michelle Rodriguez's character, who's thought to be dead, but who might be, running with the bad guys now. All right, who cares? That's the plot, and, whatever. Do the cars go fast? Do things blow up? Do people go flying in the air, defying all laws of gravity and physics? Yes, yes, and yes. That's all you really need to know here. Because by now, it's a part 6, so by now you already know if you want to see this movie. I want to see it because these movies, in spite of their stupidity, and this is certainly no exception here, have some very entertaining moments, most of which have to do with the car chases. No surprise there. Nothing to do with the character development or the dialogue, although there's some pretty laughable dialogue in this movie, particularly, how did you know the car would break my fall? Because I had faith. And I have to say, I've noticed the critics out there are holding Fast and the Furious 5 as like the gold standard of the series, which I frankly don't get. Because other than the opening car chase scene, I remember very little about Fast and the Furious.
Oh, I'll tell you what the golden standards are in this series when you get to me. But right. Go ahead.
All right. I mean, I still remember it being very sedate and not very inspired, but not so here. I don't have much to say about Fast and Furious 6, except that the last two chase scenes in this movie are so monumentally, awesomely ridiculous that they're pretty much worth the price of admission. The tank. There's a scene at a runway that runs the length of Spain.
Yeah, the longest runway ever.
It's hilariously absurd. So really, we've done this 6 times now, and it seems like I have the same review for each film. It's stupid. It's absurd. It doesn't have an intelligent thought in its dumb head. But it has great action, and, you can do a lot worse. Just go for the action, stay for the pie? I don't know. It's just dumb, and, enjoy yourself, I guess.
Okay.
And the brainlessness of it.
Okay. Eric?
Okay. So, if the series had ended at part 3, I might be talking about it in that worst trilogy canon brought up.
No way.
Well, relax there, Nick. Relax. Cool your jets there, Flash. But the series didn't end at 3, and we're now at 6. And Fast 5 was certainly the best of the series. In some respects, it is the gold standard because there were some pretty decent action scenes in that movie, basically in the first half hour. Then where Colin and I pretty much checked out as it pretty much just became sort of Ocean's 11, except with, like, the worst roadshow cast of Ocean's 11 you could possibly imagine. I mean, these Vin Diesel and Paul Walker and these guys, they're not exactly, leading a charm offensive here. And Dwayne Johnson seems to be the only actor who seems to sort of get the pure ridiculousness of this material. Meanwhile, everyone else in between the chase scenes are talking about the nature of family and stuff. And every time the word family comes up in this movie, I just want to puke.
Which comes up about 45,000 times.
Yes, the drinking game, you will die.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, if you hear the word family, take a drink, and then you die. Ride or die, drink or die. So that being said, the series has gotten better under my watch, at least. But it's a series that has moments more than I think sustainable thrills. Now, maybe I'm speaking of this too critically. After Colin basically says, stuff blows up and people, defy the law of gravity and whatnot. That's all fine and all. I would have killed somebody to have a scratch after their car, does 18 flips and, lands on their face. Just a scratch. It seems the only way you get hurt in this movie is if you punch someone, which leads me to, Gina Carano is a lovely addition to this movie. Seeing her kick the hell out of Michelle Rodriguez was very enjoyable. Colin didn't mention, has amnesia in this movie, the price of amnesia. So she's forgotten everything that she's done in this series. Whatever. There's a whole sequence where Paul Walker goes to prison for no reason. For no reason. He goes to prison to get information that Vin Diesel gets out of a guy late, like 10 minutes later. He gets out of prison, and there's like a 24-hour time frame on him being in prison, and that's never brought up for suspense or anything, whatever. As far as the last two chase sequences that Colin mentions, this is where I have to sort of step in and basically say that while there is monumentally ridiculous stuff going on during that movie, including one moment where there's a catch in midair where I literally in the theater went, I'm done. Those two chase sequences, I don't think, are very well put together. They have great destruction, and you want to throw tanks and planes and all kinds of stuff going on. There are a couple fight moments in the final one that I think are okay, but they're just not very well staged. They're not very well edited. They're not very well put together, geographically. This is probably the best of the series. But I'm still not recommending it, people. Yeah. Come on.
All right. This movie rules.
There
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love all of these movies. Here's the gold standard is the first one. The first one is still the best. It goes, for me, I would rank them the first one, the fifth one, the Tokyo Drift, the fourth one, and then the second one. This one is second, I should say. So, yeah, I did say that, didn't I? Yeah.
No, you said the fifth one.
Oh, okay. Well, then the fifth one is third, and then from there on down. I loved it. I thought it was great. It's idiotic. It makes no sense. I don't care. I actually think that a lot of the people, not just Dwayne Johnson, I think a lot of the people are in on the joke here. I'm not going to pull the Frank Marshall, Congo thing, because I think that the actors knew that Justin Lin knows that. I think those chase scenes at the end are spectacular, and I think they're really well done. I think they're very exciting and crazy. And you know what? During that leap, the whole thing with the catch. Loved it, and the audience that I saw it with went nuts when it happened.
Of course they did. They also like The Hangover too, Nick.
Oh no, they don't. No, this is a different crowd, my friend. All right. So not only that, you mentioned the fight scene between Gina Carano and Michelle Rodriguez. There's two of them. Two of them, and they're the two sexiest scenes of any movie I've seen all year long. I could watch that for 10 hours on a loop. I thought the hand-to-hand stuff was great. The fights between Tyrese. Tyrese and the Asian guy, Sung Kang.
Sung Kang.
Yep. That with the other Asian dude who would beat the hell out of him in the London subway.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Intercut with that fight with the two of them. The foot chases are great. The race between Michelle Rodriguez and Vin Diesel, awesome. I loved it. It's absolute crap. I know it. I acknowledge it. This series is, I have to say, without question, the most guilty pleasure series of any movies I've ever seen in my life. I love these movies. I acknowledge their stupidity, but let me tell you something, man. This thing is 130 minutes long, and for 130 minutes, I had an absolute blast watching this movie. I will say this, though. This is the only thing. And I'm telling you this. I think, you know, like I'm saying, here's what I'm saying. This movie kicks ass and people should see it. That's all I'm saying. And if you're a fan of the Fast and Furious movies, it rocks. It's the second best of the series and it's awesome. And yeah, baby oil jokes, hilarious. Forehead jokes, funny. I don't care. I thought it was great. But anyway, I have to say this. The audience went nuts. The audience that I saw it with went nuts during the postscript thing.
Yeah.
I, however, was disappointed.
I
gotta say, with the addition of this person, I won't give anything away. I don't want to give anything away. But when this person showed up, I went, oh, man, these movies are too cool for this guy.
I agree.
Do you agree, Colin?
Yes.
I was like, oh, come on. And that's your, you know, like, that's your tease? This guy is your tease? Because I think these movies are better than any of the movies that guy has been in. I think they're more fun. I think that I don't know. So when I saw that this guy went, but the audience went nuts. They went nuts when this dude showed up.
So I
was like, no, oh man. And it's not, Lin is gone, right? Justin Lin's not going to direct the next one, right?
Yeah, James Wan is doing it.
Okay, Wan's a good director. He's a great director, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, but man, I don't know. I'm not happy with the dude who's going to be in part 7. I just, and Colin, you know what, you feel me, right?
Yes, absolutely. I've said it many times on this show.
Yeah.
How annoyed I am with this guy.
Absolutely. So, all right, really, really quickly, this is Billy on WGN. Hey, Billy.
I wanted to talk to you about the next Fast and the Furious movie. I'm not going to reveal anything.
Okay.
But what I want to know is, the actor that we're talking about, is he coming in as...
I haven't
seen the new one.
Well, okay. You haven't seen the new one?
No. Is it going to be like a crossover?
No. Okay, don't give it... No. Okay, we're getting a little bit too detailed. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. Let me just say this. He's clearly, the way they set it up in the final sequence of the film, it's not even a post credits. It's like partial credits.
Yeah.
Is when this dude shows up, this actor shows up, he's clearly the villain. He's clearly going to be challenging. He's clearly going to be challenging Toretto and Brian. So, and the fact that I call them by their
that's frightening, man.
Wow,
frightening. Toretto and Brian. What is wrong with you?
I'm sorry, Toretto and O'Connor. Sorry.
There you go.
So he's clearly the bad guy. That's the way it looked. At least that's what I mean. You know, yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. All right, hey, Billy, thanks for calling. Go, if you haven't seen it, man, go now. Go see it now. There's got to be a 2 o'clock show somewhere. All right, so, okay, you guys are nuts, the movie rules.
I didn't hate on it.
I know.
You didn't hate on it.
I know.
I didn't hate on it either. I said it was the best in the series.
Right, and you still don't like it.
Right.
Okay, well, I will see it multiple times this summer. All right, so what do we got next week, Eric, very quickly?
We got After Earth.
Oh, okay.
Smith, and Now You See Me.
Yeah, all right, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, Ding Dong.
And Before Midnight.
And Before Midnight, we got Richard Linklater's new movie. Did you hear that Richard Linklater is doing a sequel to Dazed and Confused?
Yes.
God rules. That's all I'm saying. No,
bad,
it's going to be good.
Bad move.
No,
bad.
I don't think so. If they, hey.
Oh, these guys are 40 now. Who cares? What, are we going to watch their kids have the night of their lives?
No. There's going to be
it's a union.
It's I don't know. Actually, what I heard is it takes place in 1980 and it's different actors.
I didn't care about them the first time around.
Oh, shut up.
All right.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Later.
All right. Take care. Bye. Eric and Colin with eFilmCritic.com Movie Reviews.